Wiggly World 109.
A wiggly world. Oh, man. Hey, man. I'll tell you what. I was so ready to do this show yesterday. I got off work, a long day of work, a hard day of work, and the adrenaline's just pumping. It's one crisis after another at work yesterday. It was kind of nuts, the tech job, that is. But everyone set up, knocked it right down. It was good. It all went smoothly, but it's just very tense, and I was so jacked up. But then, you know, I get home, I'm so jonesed, I'm so, the neurons are firing, I'm ready to go, ready to cut a Wiggly's World. I have a sheet that I'm going to read down today. It's time again. Once again, I had a listener letter that prompted me to watch an episode of something or another on the National Geographic channel, a special, so I did that. And just like when we went through the Ghost Hunters thing, imaginary people hunters, that's the next new show line I'm trying to pitch to these Discovery and National Geographic and especially History Channel, all the history of ghosts, since there's been absolutely zero evidence of any real physical, any types of things relating to ghosts. Let's do a whole series about that and call it History Channel, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm going to go through, as you know, frame by frame, just about with this gimmick. We'll read through there. And then a couple other letters came in. But I was so ready to go, so I'm so fired up and ready to go. But then, you know, I have to start pushing up the go-go's, and then it starts getting late, and I have to make sure this website works and that website works, and I'm still in the process. I just yesterday, finally, my old registrar released my wiggliesworld.com domain name. It is now on my new registrar, which is the one I use for almost all of my websites, names, that is. And I changed the DNS to point it to my new wigglesworld.org. And like all the other site changes, as far as DNS goes, to my new domain host, I am the last one to have DNS replicate. So other people are trying to email me. They're getting their emails kicked back because I can't yet log in to my domain with and connect with that name and get my email reset up. But that should be resolved within the next few hours. And like I said, so I wasn't able to, of course, to sit down and do that yesterday. It was far too late. It would have been like 1 a.m. before I could have gotten started. So here I am today, and now it's Tuesday, a day where I don't go into my tech job. And, of course, all I want to do is just, pass out or go unconscious or something of that nature, because this has been the formula. Work plus work equals the everything I do minus any type of fun things to happen. And you have a couple pies in there, and that's been the formula for all this media that's been coming out. In fact, I have a, as soon as I'm done with this, I'll start editing the, oh yeah, that's right, last night I ripped the Colin Delaney interview, so I got that off the cameras, the two camera shoot, and the audio. So today I'll start piecing that together, and then we'll have a new WrestlingInterviews.com, a new show for that. Before I get started, and I still have to collect up all the emails into one cohesive pile, it's still mixed in with how to draw comics and everything else, all these other letters and back of envelopes and things like this. Before I get started in this, just want to take a brief moment to talk a little bit about the iPhone, and maybe a little bit about wrestling, and maybe a little bit about the latest We Talk Games. Of course, that came out. Very excited about that. And yesterday, the celebration of the first lunar landing. I loved television yesterday. Television was great yesterday. The Science Channel had everything to do with, you know, Apollo 11 and space and the moon. And finally, they're replaying, National Geographic is replaying that great moon conspiracy hoax debunking episode, which is just fantastic. You tie that with the Mythbusters episode on the moon hoax, and there's really no other conspiracy theories that you could throw at the whole moon landing being a hoax. Now, of course, my take on this, and I'll throw my two cents in here, because hey, why not deal with, tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorists when you can be talking about the incredible men that landed on the moon with all the adversity that they face and the giant teams of people behind them and everything that could have went wrong and just blown their ass to kingdom come? Why not talk about the loonies like Joe Rogan, Now, there's a guy I'd like to get. You know, he's very good with the UFC commentary. He knows a lot. He's the play-by-play man. So he must know a thing or two about Ultimate Fight. I'd like to get him in a ring. You know, I don't know anything. There's my first fight. Him. But that's beside the point. And then it'll be skeptic versus the lunatic, whatever he would be classified as, the believe-anything guy. And have a platform to talk about it, too. Well, I have a platform as well, and it's called A Wiggly World Show. And here we are. Thank you for joining me. Where was I? So, my two cents on the conspiracy. First of all, if you watch the original footage, and we are talking about not only video footage, live video footage, the black and white stuff, but also the filmed footage. And one thing that a lot of people say, oh, the camera, the film would have been destroyed, and there's no way you could have film up there and going through the Van Allen belt and the Kuiper belt and the Uncle Moses belt. Yes, right, that's right. Film could never survive any type of rough environmental exposure of any sort. That's why they were. Do you ever wonder back in the day, like, who filmed the separation of the rocket booth, the second stage, the first stage of the rocket when it comes off? You see that flying off of there. Who filmed? They recovered the film from these the different stages of the rocket, for cripe's sake. What do you mean that it can't survive anything? Insanity. Now, today's more sophisticated, less mechanical cameras perhaps are, you know, more vulnerable, and certainly the IMAX film and things like this. But I got to tell you, a lot of these things are perhaps due to the fact that, you know, we don't want things to go wrong. Well, a lot of stuff could have gone wrong with Apollo 11, and it didn't. And a lot of things were stacked up against it that could have gone wrong at any point along this whole thing. And that's what's amazing about it. That's what's so, so amazing about it. The fact that everyone survived is just amazing, unbelievable. It's fantastic. And just rewatching some of the footage, I have never seen before. Even the historical moment of when Neil Armstrong does one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. I actually cried today because I just thought, you know, we're stepping on another world. This is our first time that we're off the Earth and we're stepping on another planet. Except for, of course, all the people at Montauk that did remote viewing and actually went to Mars and looked at the statue of a horse with a clock in its belly. That notwithstanding, this is the first real time that it wasn't part of some type of mushroom trip that we did this. And you know, it is amazing. And once again, my take on this was that if you watch all this footage, the video, the film, and of course all the photographic evidence and everything else, we didn't have the technology to fake that. It would have been easier to go, it was 250,000 miles to the moon than it would have been to try to make this look convincing. Because even if you watch, 2001, which is phenomenal, it's great. There's so many subtleties, and there's so much, especially to the trained eye, or I shouldn't even say the trained eye. I think you really have a feel for it. I don't think it's necessarily something. Well, you can train yourself to look more critically. No doubt about it. Knowing what to look for is a very, very important part of that process. But like, I could look at a piece of footage, and I'm pretty good at saying, you know, how they did CG, puppet, miniature. All different types of methods that you could be presented with to look at a footage of whatever, something flying through the trees, or alien or whatever, a rubber mask, and I'm pretty good. I'm very good actually at knowing pretty fairly quickly, within a few seconds, what I'm looking at. And you have to remember that I've been involved with the UFO community since, you know, mid-80s, and going to conventions and things like this. I used to go to them, especially in, 87, 88, 89, 90. I used to go to New York and Philadelphia and go to different conventions. And I also was a big proponent of Zechariah Sitchin, and we'll get into that a little bit later when we go over this. So, when I first started hearing about these lunar conspiracy, the lunar landing conspiracy gimmicks, I only remember hearing people say, oh yeah, there's water on the moon. And so I heard things like that, but then it wasn't until, I mean, within the past maybe 10 years that I heard that people actually thought that, you know, it was filmed, the Mars thing with O.J. Simpson. Capricorn 1, yeah. So, it's good. I don't have any complaints about it. I loved yesterday. It was a phenomenal day. I wish that's how it was every day, but unfortunately now we're back to fish and things like this. And, you know, there's it's exciting to watch people fish, I guess, but not so much for me. And building big things, I like them sometimes. How many? You don't really need a whole series on this, I don't think. The next thing I want to talk about is an app for the iPod Touch or your iPhone. Now, the absolute best way. What? The 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 best way. An absolute best way, by the way, if I didn't make that clear. To read a comic is by reading an actual comic. Now, for many, many years, you may have heard about downloadable comics and things like this. People scan them. Actual fans scan their own comics and put them up in CBR or CBZ formats. And there's different types of reader. But there's nothing like sitting down and holding a comic and reading it. But I've tried many, many different apps to read my comics on my iPod Touch. Now, the iPod Touch is kind of small. So, having something that could read a comic and you be able to look at it and see it and it be, you know, halfway decent or something you'd even want to do is a pretty hard task because it's so tiny. And if you want to read a comic full size, then you use your computer and one of these readers for your computer. But who wants to sit in front of their computer, and, you know, and read a comic? The comic is portable. It's accessible. You can have it anytime. So I do want to recommend Comic Zeal. Comic Zeal is the first comic reader on the iPod Touch or iPhone, first app. And because this doesn't really fit in We Talk Games, because it's not a game, I think this is a good platform for it. It'll only take me a few seconds to explain. The great thing about this is that, number one, you can actually, if you have your computer, you download a free app of Comic Zeal that will convert your CBR or CBZ files into a format that Comic Reader can utilize, and then you sync it right from that application on your desktop. And then you have collections, and all your collections will show up on like a shelf inside of a comic box on a shelf. And if you go inside of your collection and you start reading a book, you bomb out of it, you go back, it will put a little red bookmark in that comic to show that you've started to read it. It also tells you if you haven't started reading your comic, and if you've completed reading it, it puts it in a Mylar bag with the comic backing board. So it's very, very nice how they display your collections here, and a lot of thought put into that. But also, you have access to their online collection, and their online collection features public domain comics. So Eerie, Blue Beetle, some horror, some nuclear age comics and things like this. They give you some starter comics to check them out. Now, reading the books, this is where, all this interface is gorgeous, it's lovely, but what about reading the books? Reading the books is probably the best in this app than on any other app that I've used. When you take the comic and you open it up, and then you turn your iPod sideways, or your iPhone, I'm going to call it the iPod, you turn it sideways. Now, the comic is the entire single page is the width of the iPod Touch touchscreen. And I can actually see this. I can actually see it. I can actually read it. Now, I would recommend revisiting comics. And what this really reminds me of is when I was younger, I used to get these digest size reprints of comic books. And they would put like six issues of a comic full color into these little digest hand. And these were done by published by Pocket Books New York. And these are really, really neat things. And they would reprint all the like first issues. Like I have up to episode 20 of the Spider-Man comics. And this is why I know those first six issues of each comic so well, because I read them in these little pocket digest size comics. Here's my Incredible Hulk volume 2, volume 1, and it goes through, and here we have everyone's favorite complete issues 1 through 6, complete and unabridged. Well, it's kind of sad that they don't have the ads in there, but that's what's neat about some of these scan jobs, is that they'll come complete with the ads, speak better English, and things like this. So when you hold this sideways, it's almost the same size as this digest comics. A little bit smaller. But still, I'm used to reading them in this small size. And I can actually see it on my iPod. Now, of course, you could zoom in and everything like that, but it sort of breaks up the flow. But if you hold it sideways, of course, the entire page won't fit. You have to scroll down. But usually that works quite well with the way that sequential art goes. So I highly recommend this. Comic Zeal. Let me get the publisher here. It's just Comic Zeal, all is one word, by Bitolithic. Check out their website, and you can see what it's all about. And I don't think there's any free version of this, but definitely worth it if you have some of these CBRs, if you have some of these CBZs, check them out. Or if you want to take advantage of the public domain that they offer, they have a lot of titles up there, and you can just download them for free. I recommend, of course, Eerie and Blue Beetle. Those are the original Blue Beetle, the dude that could fly, and he wore almost an entire blue outfit over his entire body with it, with the, like the Phantom style mask and things like this. I also wanted to give my two cents on pro wrestling, but I don't really want to get into it because I don't want to be negative. You know, I don't want to be negative. There's a lot of things. Number one, I really haven't been watching. I quickly took in a bit of an ECW during a meal about a week ago, and just from the recaps that I saw from other shows, I don't see a lot happening there. And unfortunately, Ring of Honor, I've been watching that as well. I like to watch that maybe early morning time, sometimes a little bit of breakfast, a little ROH. And I just keep asking myself, is this what Ring of Honor used to be like when, you know, I was excited to go to it? And, you know, this time I saw Kenta, and it just seemed like some of the stars of Ring of Honor. I mean, I love seeing Austin Aries. You know, other guys are good. The Generico Steen connection, it just doesn't seem to be delivering like the Ring of Honor atmosphere. And I mean, even if you buy the DVDs, I'm sure this really doesn't match up there to even the quality of those, and then the atmosphere and the feeling of that. Maybe it's a commentary team. I don't know. And, you know, once again, I'm not trying to say anything bad about anybody. Here's a quick Mike Hodgwood for you again. Real quickie. Here we go. I still haven't worked on this publicly, you know, only in private. So it's not that good. But I'll try to get it for you.
Just a quadruple moonsault. First time ever in wrestling history. Quadruple moonsault. There's 9 simultaneous vertebrae by every competitor through a 15-foot folding table. A drop kick! A drop kick! Oh, he hit him with it! Oh, a drop kick!
Thank you. That's my Mike Hodgwood. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to have the same and moving along and moving me and compellingness. I don't know. Was I dreaming it? Samoa Joe and things like this back in those days? And even the first run of Kenta and seeing him back here was, you know, okay. But here we go. You got the Young Bucks. And their opponents are doing all the high spots. How can you have Young Bucks and the opponents are doing all the spots? So it just didn't make any sense. I don't know what's going on there. But that's it. And really, that's about it. I don't know. And it looks like they're spending money on Bret Hart and Woo Boy, Ric Flair, and I don't know, it seems to be losing focus. It's sad. It's very sad, because here's something that could be as popular as TNA. Now, of course, they're on a network that I appear to be the only person that has this network, the HDNet, but I love it. And, you know, they really could get a draw there, and I don't know how they're doing. I don't think the company as a whole is doing that well. And boy, I can just see this is going to get very, very ugly with Dragon Gate. I think that we're going to see, and you know, we haven't really started the Dragon Gate blowout yet, but once that gets moving, I can see this getting very ugly with protecting the talent. And I don't want to see that happen, because, you know, I want that talent in Chikara. I don't want Chikara ostracized by ROH. I don't want, you know, any bad feelings between the people that work ROH, people that work Dragon Gate, and everything like that. And like that there. So that's really about my two cents on pro wrestling. I haven't watched any TNA in weeks, and this is great. I mean, it's lovely. And instead of doing spending the time that I used to do watching pro wrestling, I've been trying to fit in playing video games, and I think I'm gonna actually be able to contribute a little bit more than one title to next month's show. But I want to try to work it into We Talk Games, into discussing it with other people while I have them on the line about what games I've been playing. So it's not just me alone or me talking to TT or Stinky. Speaking of We Talk Games, yeah, so it finally came out, episode number 4, very exciting to me. Nolan Bushnell and Ralph Baer, and I spoke about this briefly on the previous show, and I was really... I was torn about whether I should talk about who the guests were going to be, but I also knew that they were already in a can, so they weren't going to cancel. And I knew that the quality wasn't perfect. Now, I had not gone in to edit these those bits yet. So I was like, well, maybe if I could try to get a little bit of hype about it. But I got to tell you, you know, we're just steadily increasing, as always, with that that show. It's sad. I expected a double or triple in listenership with the quality of guests. I mean, Tommy Tallarico, to me, is still quite relevant in video games, especially with the Video Games Live and still continuing to create music and a Guinness Book of World Records. And Walter Day, I couldn't believe how many more people knew Walter Day's name than knew Tommy Tallarico's name when I would mention it to him. You know, people at work and people that really don't know too much about gaming. A lot more people knew Walter Day. Now, once I started naming down the list of games that Tallarico created music for, then it was all a different story. But most people knew Walter Day. And, of course, Ralph Baer, you know, this is a guy that I always wanted to talk to. I loved Odyssey. I couldn't afford it. And I didn't get into this. I couldn't afford the Odyssey when I was younger. I only knew one person that had it. His name was Farrell. Farrell. And he worked in... He lived, rather. He didn't work. He was a kid. He lived in New York City. And I just thought, wow. You know, he's all by himself in his room. And he gets to put the static cling sheets over top his television, and I don't get to do that. That's amazing. And he told me all about it. I went on a trip across the country with him and a bunch of other teenagers. Yeah, I was only 12 year old. Everybody else was a teen. They let me in because, yeah, I looked older when I was younger, and now I look younger when I'm older. So that's how that works. And so I always loved Odyssey. I always loved to hear about Ralph Baer. And, you know, Simon, wow, that was another cool invention. And you know, such an interesting story. And also, you know, Nolan Bushnell, holy cripes, I never thought I'd be able to get either of these guys on the show, and both of the guys on the same show. So that was amazing too. And I had a lot of fun. I had a blast talking with John Sellers. I'm totally honest about that book. I hope that you bought it. Arcade Fever, a really, really neat book. It is my favorite. I think it's right now it's my favorite video game book. I also mentioned another book that I liked, and there's another book that I like that was a prima strategy guide for Mario, but it sort of just did like the history of all Mario games, and that's a really, really, really neat book as well. And, you know, some of these strategy guys sometimes when they go the extra mile, they really deliver a fun book to look at. Visually, it has to be stimulating as well, because that's what we're talking about, visual media. You can't just sit there and, you know, type what you think it, unless you're doing ASCII images, I guess. So having those two guys on the show, I mean, you know, that's pretty amazing. And I hope that that Nolan Bushnell was, you know, serious about calling back each month and getting little updates from him, because that'll be really neat. So that's been my We Talk Games experience. It's been really taking up a lot of my spare time outside of my tech job. My tech job's taking up the most time. Then Chikara, of course. I got to tell you, I'm so on autopilot with Chikara. It's not phone it in, because it's definitely a lot of work I have to pay attention to and try to produce a quality project every time. Every episode edit is different. And you know, challenging in its own way. So it's definitely not a phone in, but it's definitely more of an autopilot. I sometimes I'm going about my daily business, and I'm like, I guess I finished that Chikara bit. Wow, I don't even remember. It's sort of like I block it out or something. A lot of work. But there's also a talented guy that did the little premiere for, if you bought the Pod Preview, he did the little premiere of Anniversario, and he did another trailer for the next night of Anniversario, and he's really good. I don't have to coach him at all. He wants direction. He wants criticism. I have no criticism. Perfect. Don't use filters for no reason. You know, don't try to get all crazy with things. Let the footage speak for itself. Make the footage, if you can make the footage look like the concept of chicken. Like, I try to do my edits for the intros to reflect what I think Chikara, the best of Chikara could be. I want to say make it look better than it is, but that's the goal. Make it look better than it is, but you know that's not what I'm really doing. I'm making it look like really what it is, and showing the best parts and showing why people should be interested in it. And that's why I always tried to stick. That's why I put the entrances in on last year's theme. I put the entrances because I thought, now here's a spectacle that looks great. You know, that aspect of it. You know, when you're in Allentown and or where, you know, all these smaller halls, the fire halls. You know, I didn't have any of that footage in there. I had footage of the ring being in disarray in Philly Arena, but for last year, I didn't have any footage from any of the other venues because, you know, Garland is nice in the summertime and rope lighting and things like that, icicle lights and everything. I love it. I think it's an amazing part of Chikara. But when you're trying to keep people watching your video, it's very important to put your best foot forward, as they say. And that's what I always try to do with my editing and, you know, my music creation and things. Keep it exciting. Show the best of. Show what this company really looks like. At its best moments, and trying to capture that, I tell you, is very, very difficult. I've never been able to capture Trapdoor live and do it justice. When you I cringe at watching even the footage from the from the Roxy, which, you know, I love. I worked very hard to get all that to happen, and it almost didn't. I almost didn't have all those lights and everything else. I almost didn't have that. That was last minute, last day stuff. And you know, I had to work with Phil. I told him, Phil, you know, I worked for you to be able to have these lights and have this other thing. You know, you wouldn't be able to afford this if I really had tried. I know, but that's why I worked for you. I did, like, I don't know, weddings or some other type of. It was a graduation day. Something like this. So, I don't know. I'm all over the place. But, yeah, editing. I'm very happy with this new fella coming in here. And I think that's about it. Let's get into your emails. You know, I do this show. I talk to you in my mind throughout the day. Several times throughout the day. And, of course, there's tons of things that just never make it in the show. They never make it past. I don't know if I do it in reality. Did I do it only in my mind? It's hard to say. But let's get into your letters. Oh, before I do that, you know, a couple of months ago, I went and attended a Microsoft conference where you go in and you learn about some new technologies. And it was really just a pitch for both training and this administrative package for administrators, network administrators, and server administrators, and things like this. And I actually went to Microsoft's place, their house. Yeah, they have a house here outside of Philly in Pennsylvania, where you go and it's Microsoft. That's what is in there. So I went there. And I, really briefly, since I appear to be doing imitations today, I'd like to do an imitation of a Microsoft conference. I don't really know what else you call these things. I guess they're, you know, training things. I don't know. I can't remember what they're called. But this is my imitation of a Microsoft conference attended by Microsoft certified people. And so it was mostly predominantly male. There was a couple ladies, not many, but mostly men, mostly of a greater girth than the average man. Although the average is on a sliding scale right now. And this is my imitation of what that room sounded like while sitting there waiting for the lecture to begin. Here we go. Microsoft Conference 101. This is sitting in silence. Oh, boy. Not good. Not good. Whoever... these people in attendance need to hit the gym of their... we had a gym at T-Mobile. We had a little workout area. And I hope that they put these in at different large companies and corporations where these IT individuals work, because they did not sound good. It was like an asthma convention and an out of breath convention just sitting there. Got to get a cup of coffee. I was like, oh my gosh, was I out of this world or what? Here we go. Mr. Mutant Larry. Hey, Wigs, I don't usually write a Wig World, though it is my favorite podcast, as I enjoy everyone's letters and your topics too much to waste time on my own. I actually was inspired by the last We Talk Games to rethink again, and this is talking about We Talk Games 4, rethink again a life question that has been on, been one of the major ones in my life, and I'd like you to, and I'd like you and this listener's ideas on this topic. Last We Talk Games was great interview with legends from the birth of gaming. I, being one of the Ricky old age, early 40s, realized I am OG, original gamer. I was there for the birth, and I have to turn on another light, sorry. Just took me a few minutes to light the candle that I read by. Okay. Original gamer, I was there at the birth of this media, as would be someone who purchased wax cylinders from Edison would be there at the birth of the recording media. Yet I am only a casual gamer. Hey, you know what? I am too, man. I don't excel at games. I mean, play a lot of games. I play a lot of games, and I enjoy them. But I'm by no means a prolific gamer. I consider myself a little bit above casual. That's probably about it. Yet I am only a casual gamer, even though I was raised basic programming on Atom and Commodores and playing Pong units and Atari. I can't play as much as or as many titles as I would like due to time. I feel your pain, man. You know, I'm really thankful for We Talk Games because it at least forces me to sit and play games for at least half a day before I sit down and record my portion of the episode. If nothing else, then to just try to go through all the WiiWare titles and downloadable arcade at home is what I like to call them nowadays. This is also my life in all directions. I have a ton of music I would like to listen to get to know, but no time. I get to see maybe one movie a month. I watch almost no TV anymore. I squeeze in a comic while on the crapper. And I never read anymore, but listen to books on tape and podcasts. Even though I have an iPod in my ears, streaming info into my head much of the day, still can't hear all the books on tape I would like. Man, we're so similar, and I'm sure this is, you know, technology has afforded us to save time. yet, why do we still have no time? In fact, we have even less, because now there is just so much media, and we spend most of our time sifting through crap. That's what it is. You know, it's not necessarily that we don't have access. We have access to such great information, and yet we waste our time with, can I say it? 20th century cooning. There's so much racism going on in the WWE right now, from what I've been able to gather just from watching ECW and their recaps of bits here and there. I mean, it's so much, like, 1940s racism, and it's so sad. It's horrible. 1950s, 1960s. I mean, racism exists all throughout history, but it just seems to be getting, it's going back to really some ignorant type of types of crap. I don't know what's going on with that. But I mean, you know, we spend so much of our time sifting through crap because there's just so much. to try to get at the good stuff. And you know what? Then we end up wasting our time with some of that crap as well and becoming attached to it. I definitely have. Ask me who my favorite girl heartthrob. I don't know what even could be. You just, you know, you become obsessed with these solenoid stars here. Ashley Scott, yeah, Birds of Prey. I'm watching the entire Birds of Prey series I mentioned last episode. And let me tell you, it's thin, man. It's thin. It's thinner. It's Ring of Honor's thin. This is all thin, you know. And I can't pull myself away. I must see every episode. So I'm slowly going through that, you know, when I sit down to eat or go to bed or do something like that. Ashley Scott. And it's so funny because I like Ashley Scott, man. She looks like John Cena as like this hot girl. And then I realized, it dawned on me, full circle, wrestling, comic books, everything, television, internet, TV crushes. Ashley Scott played Molly in 12 Rounds, with the John Cena movie. She was blonde in there, of course, not the sexy short-haired brunette that she was in Birds of Prey, that I must have. I must possess her. But let's get back to, I don't have enough time to possess her. And then you realize, you know, this is the exact audience that they were targeting with Dark Angel. It's thin. It's all thin. And it's just based on a very one-dimensional character. It's hot, running around in spandex and, you know, trying to get different peaks throughout the episode. That's about it. And, you know, every now and then they throw in something that's really cool and you wish that you owned. So, that's kind of neat. Here we go. In all directions. Yeah, man. You know, it's flippy-floppy. I wish I only had one interest. I wish I didn't want to do music and artwork, and, you know, video and create media. I wish I didn't want to do all these things. And then web work, pardon me, I'm having a soda and I shouldn't be having it. It's a Diet Right Pure Zero Cherry Cola, sure to pack on the pounds, because it's got zero of anything. I never trust anything that has zero of anything. And that's for no reason. So, yes, even though here is my Quiz-a-buck. One of my earliest desires was to be a Renaissance man. I wanted to be like Leonardo, non-turtle, and get to be hands-on with all the different aspects of our world. But times are so different. I have so much more info than he did. If I drive too far down the road, I would become one of those people who know every iota about bee cross-pollinations but have never heard of a Beatles song. I even went to Ohio University, believe it or not, to learn and not just be just specialized for a job. And that's common thread of a Wiggly World scholar. Just someone that was self-sufficient, went to higher education just to learn, not because they didn't have to work. But of course, you have to work and do all that as well. So now I am a walking Trivial Pursuit game, but a master of nothing. Yep, I consider myself a jackass of all trades. Yet I don't want to be the greatest rocket scientist ever, if that's all I know, and have no idea that the Green Goblin killed Gwen Stacy, or that my own theory here, the Heisenberg Uncertain Principle, may explain the dual nature of light. Yeah, I know, man. You want to do it all. It's I don't know if this is some type of bipolar type of thing. I don't know exactly where this fits, that you want to do it all. I don't think it's any type of disease. I just think, or even people may say, you know, attention deficit. You can't stay on one topic for too long. You got to jump around. I just think it's living in the modern age. So long, too long here. Can one be a Renaissance man in the world we have? No, you have to be a Renaissance person now. That's the only stipulation. In the world we have. And, you know, the problem is that as there's still a lot to create, And this all goes back to, you know, you've heard the old adage, nothing new under the sun. Even back when there was plenty of room for creating things. Now that room for creating things is still very wide. There's still a lot of room to create things. It's just that now there's such an explosion. I mean, just with the vast population explosion also comes the idea explosion, because everyone has ideas, even if they're dumb ideas or whatever. It's all subjective, but you know, there's still a lot of room for new things. It's just harder to stumble upon something that wasn't prominently featured as already being created by someone else. Do I want to be a man on the hill contemplating while others achieve? Sorry for the bad spelling, but rush to get this out before bed, work, night. Thanks, Wig, and keep up all you do. It means a lot. Means a lot to a lot. Thanks, man. Thanks, Mutant Larry. Means a lot to me to hear from you. I really love the work of Mr. Mutant Larry, even if it's just in his words or his photos, are incredibly entertaining. And what he cultivates from the internet is amazing as well. And you're right. You know, we're very, very like-minded. We have a lot of similar ideas, similar lifestyles, similar visions. Of course, we have our own directions in there, and who wouldn't? But I've heard this, you know, Renaissance term tossed about a lot, especially in my early goings, the first few years of podcasting, you know, after getting a Wiggly World out there. But because I try to spread myself out, and I don't do this purposely, it's just like I have nothing, can't help myself. I mean, we can't help ourselves, me and Larry. We can't help ourselves. You either want to do everything or you want to do a few things. I don't know. It's not something that I want to do because I think I could do it better than anyone. It's just something I enjoy doing. I enjoy sitting down here and cutting this show, or I wouldn't be doing it. Time management is something that I get yelled at about. Well, I don't live that way. I don't live by that time management structure. I live by a way, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I go to bed. And, you know, I try to fit in structure around, well, I'm forced to do it by my tech job, and you're forced to do it by your dock. I want to say dock. You work on a dock, but not like a sailor, like a loading dock or something. A warehouse type of thing, situation. But, you know, look what you have to show for that. There's a lot of time to multi-process when you're doing that. When you're creating order in a back storage room and paying attention to that, concentrating on that, there is still time to do the other with the brain. It's like President Kennedy said, we plan to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. You're doing the other thing. And what is a decade, by the way? Was that the precursor to Farm Aid and Live Aid? Decade. I'm falling to bed. Okay, here we go. Thanks, Mutant Larry. Love it. Yeah, I feel your experience. Regarding Wiggly World 108, the greatest colorblind pop star of 2012. Hey, Wig, I am a first-time writer to the show. Well, I did once Skype you on SWF, but that was a long time ago. That was like the 50s. I listened to SWF from episode 80 until you left, and I have been listening to Wiggly World for about the same length of time. I thought that I would write to share an experience with you. The other day, as I did some shopping at Worcester, my local city, I was approached by a preacher who was handing out leaflets to people in the street. As I had no interest, I walked past him and thought nothing of it. This was until I felt a hand on my shoulder, the man pulling me to face him. He then began to shout at me, claiming that there is no place on God's earth for ignorant people such as yourself. I was somewhat shocked and angered, but again I attempted to walk on. The man then yelled after me in the street, claiming that I was destined to a life of sin and an afterlife of eternal blah blah mumbo jumbo. I had no idea what sort of fruitcake that I was dealing with. I turned around and began to argue back at the guy. I'm never usually one to make a scene, but this guy was really getting on my nerves. I began to argue not just the existence of God, but also why this man felt it necessary to harass members of the public who are going about their everyday business. The crowd began to gather, and it was not long before a police officer came bounding towards us as we were still arguing. The officer told me to leave the scene, threatening arrest if I did not do so. I was not happy, to say the least. Did the preacher have the right to hassle me? Was I wrong in arguing my view? Why should I be the one looked at as the villain by the officer? Does a preacher have protection from the law? Or is it even possible? No, just tolerance. Or is it even possible that the officer was of Christian faith and is biased against me? I don't know if this is really a topic worth talking about, but I thought I'd share my experience nonetheless. Keep up the good work. Regards from the UK. Zach, thanks, man. Thanks, pal. Well, first of all, sorry that you had to go through that. It really stinks and sucks balls. A quick shutdown I borrow from a website, and you can go there. Why doesn't God heal amputees? Or why does God hate amputees? Let me look this up real quick here. Yeah, why won't God heal amputees.com? You know, this is a great place to start. Could give you much better answers than I ever could. Although, you know, I've tried over the past episodes. I really don't want to get into debating people. But, you know, right now, at this time in history, we still accept people, lunatics out in the street, saying that you know, God, and you're going to go to hell, you're going to burn in hell from the loving God, and he's going to torment you for eternal damnation, and your loved ones will be celebrating in heaven all happy, even though knowing that you, their most beloved nephew, is festering in boil-infested pits of hellfire that is somehow under the earth, I guess near the iron core. Neutrally, magnetically, I don't know what, hot. And while they're up in heaven, somewhere between Sputnik and that dog's skeleton, I guess. And getting pelted with space junk. That must suck. I watched a lot on the moon landing and, you know, no angels flying around up there or anything. But yet, I guess that's where they're going to go. It's sad, but at the same time, people, there are some people still that exist today that think the internet is only for porn. So that's why they have to go out and do their thing. But if they really believed the Bible, this is exactly the type of thing that they would be doing. They should be like not only just tapping you on the shoulder, but like dragging you to church. And since you're in the UK, dousing your head with holy water. Oh, wait. Can't do that now. Let's get to Noel Malensky, and I will get back. Really, there's nothing really to talk about with that. Go to whywon'tgodhealamputees.com. Read about in there. That's some good fuel for the fodder if you ever get stuck in this type of situation. You don't have to fight people. You don't have to, you know, argue with them. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to know very much. If you just know that, it's pretty much enough to stop them. And once again, it's unfortunate. So this is more of a sharing story, I think, with our listeners. But it ties into Noel Malensky's email. Been a while since I last emailed you, mostly due to the insane amount of work. Not inane, that would be silly. You're born with a lot of work to do. Insane amount of work and stress on my job is causing me. At least I can say I only have to put up with this until the 24th of July, and then that's when he goes for the big, big pay cut. Then I will be finally done with my old job. I am a bit excited, but mostly apprehensive about moving on in my life. Sure. from this job. It is something that must be done, though, if I am to grow as a human being. I also found a wonderful story from the BBC about churches banning holy water. This is from the BBC. Churches, so it ties in with your street preacher there. Banning holy water due to swine flu. Here's a link. And then it goes to bbc.co.uk. And I'm sure if you look it up, it's in the Essex section. Churches ban holy water or something of that nature. I had a question about the holy water. Isn't it supposed to heal you from sickness, not cause it? I guess our new age diseases are too much for God's holy water. I'm still waiting. Well, yeah. I mean, this is so self-evident. It needs no observation. I am still waiting for the time he rides down here on a horse with his magic sword to smite the non-believers. And that's what he will do as well. I am sure it will have as much effect on us as does the holy water to diseases. yeah, man, it's something. And he writes in something for We Talk Games. And thanks, Noel, for getting on the message boards. I want to mention this. Everyone that listens to Wiggly's World.com, a Wiggly World rather, and Wiggly, and go to Wiggly's World.com and click on the boards are back in town. Click on the message boards and be a part of that community. I spoke about it briefly last time. You know, it's nothing heavy, man. It's nothing heavy. It's just fun little things. You'll be able to talk. I haven't been there for the past 3 or 4 days. That's quite unusual, but there's just been other things that I've been trying to concentrate on to be able to get you this show. So I'm gonna head right back on there as soon as I'm done with this episode and make sure I go through all my links and find out what new has been going on. Who knows, there's whole developments can break out on there. They can move kind of quick, and getting more people. I think we're up to like 70. That's pretty you know, I talk to some people, they say that's great for an independent board that you don't advertise and don't, you know, it's all just, you know, independent, not publicized or whatever. And but I look at the numbers of the podcast and it's sad that it's such a tiny fraction of listeners. But I guess it just shows that people want to listen to a podcast, that's all they want to do. They don't necessarily go to a website or this or that. Yeah, but you know, this brings to mind something I complain about, especially every summer when I have all the doors and windows open. There's a church directly catty corner from me called St. Mark's Lutheran Church, and I've been really having a lot of fun with Google Maps lately, and my Wii channel. I have a special Wii Earth, it's called. It's part of the Homebrew channel. They just had an update on that. It's great. I hope that Nintendo never shuts down that Homebrew channel, because I don't play, you know, bootleg Wii games or anything like that. I only play things that I own, and I do a lot of the free ware stuff, and I really enjoy this. And I was doing Wii Earth the other night, and I really can hone right in on my house, and I see my house, I see the pool, I see my chicken coop. Google has it where I still have the old tree there. The other map site did not. It was newer, and you see the tree in the back. It was like during summer. The other one was during fall or winter. So it's really neat, and my Wiggly van is in the driveway and everything like that. It's really neat to zoom in using the Google Maps. So you could see the church across the street that is the offender. The church constantly has false alarm with their security system. And this security system has an outside blowhorn. Why? And it goes off for 20 minutes before it shuts itself off. And it's constantly going under false alarm. And it just, to me, it just seems like you have zero faith that God will protect your church here. Why do you need to install a security system and put a blowhorn outside to annoy the neighbors? It's quite loud. It's just meh, 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 for 20 minutes. And just got mad at me when I said, people are steal. Yeah, but this is almighty fucking God. Let's see, no worries, I'm not dead, don't we? I look forward to your next episode of Wiggly World. We talk games, car podcasts, go. Keep up all the amazing work. Thanks, man. Until next time, from under my aluminum foil hat, this is Noel signing off. Oh, yeah, because he mentions in here that thanks for all your great podcasts. They have saved me from pulling out my hair over the last month at my job. My sleep pattern has suffered and my brain function has dropped below normal levels. I did find the vaccine YouTube clip rather interesting. He had emailed me before, and I guess I must have lost the email, about a YouTube clip warning us about the dangers of vaccinations, and that we are going to, or not the dangers of it, that we are going to be go into a mandatory vaccination level, alert level, soon because of the swine flu. And he says, I did find a vaccine clip, and really must try not to jump to such conclusions, or else maybe a guy wearing the aluminum foil hat and living under a bridge. So I'll do my best in the future to keep my conspiracy theories to a minimum, or at least think them out before I email others with my thoughts. No, I didn't get to talk on it. I didn't get to touch on it because I didn't get to investigate it. And now I will have to go in to do that. But right now, the swine flu, I mean, it could be a very, very serious thing. And that's not overreacting. It could be a very serious thing. It might just fizzle out like the original swine flu did in the 70s. So it's not necessarily a conspiracy. That's swine flu really exists. Okay, so we know it's not conspiracy theory. How the level of its effect on humanity has yet to play itself out. You know, stay tuned. Longtime fan from Hi Wiggly, longtime fan, Mike. It's from Mike. From when I got my first iPod about 3 years back, I still follow your current podcast, but first heard you on SWF, hearing you mention the Sharpshooters. He wanted to let me know that Twitter pic of Ryan from the Sharpshooters in a hospital bed with a messed up arm. You might have seen it now. No, I have to go check that out and follow them on Twitter. I have to follow them. Personal note, I would like to thank you for all your work entertaining us. I always look forward to hearing you and enjoy the way you communicate your views and thoughts. Good going, man. He got a touch. Got an iPod touch as well. When his old video iPod died, and he, as per my review on We Talk Games, and it does have limited spell check. Yeah, I think there's an app for that or something, but I don't know how that works, but hopefully you'll figure it out. Hey, man, let's get into this. Now, I have to find the original. Where's the original email that says that Kirby wanted me to look at this? I don't see that here. Oh, you know what? I wrote my notes on the back of other emails. That's what it is. Here it is. I have more things. Ho, ho. Okay, good. Okay, here we go. I have one more letter before I get into Kirby's letter, and then the bulk of the show should take us to the next hour, I hope. I'm currently listening to Wiggly World 108, and I feel compelled to finally email you and give you my thoughts on pretty much all that you do, with my reasons for doing so hopefully becoming apparent. First of all, I will apologize for the length of this email, as I am quite confident that I will ramble on for far too long, but hopefully reading my thoughts will give you a small fraction of the satisfaction that I get from listening to your own ramblings on your various show. I first heard your fine voice, being pumped into my earballs on SWF a couple of years ago, and it was a Wiggly World that really held my interest. A little later, I got into Chikara and We Talk Games, although I must admit Magic Milkshake Machine and Trapdoor still remains as strange and foreign to me as that new wrestling podcast, Smart Sesame Street Fan. Don't know if you heard of it, but it's not so good. I don't know. I haven't heard of it. But I will tell you this, that you're from Northern Ireland. So sometimes I've heard this a lot. Well, and I shouldn't limit it to people in the UK, but I think Magic Milkshake Machine, I think you have to live on the East Coast, or at least have lived on the East Coast of the United States to understand a lot of the references that we make on there. Trapdoor, I don't know. That's more Japanese, maybe. But one of the main reasons... oh, wait, here we go. Oh, here we go. Through your podcast, I've learned to change the way I perceive the world around me, as well as being introduced to a whole new wealth of music, including the quite lovely Rachel Sage. She is lovely. While I've been an atheist for many years, your Bible teachings have shown me some of the evil acts of the supposed God and the utter ridiculousness of some of the teachings that the Bible has to offer. I would love to go into further detail about that. A Wiggly World has meant to me personally, and some of the similarities between you and I, but I'm conscious as to not go off on complete tangent. Hey, man, it's all good. But one of the main reasons for the email is to simply say thanks for all you've done, and I hope that you continue to produce podcasts for a long time to come. Listening to your shows, I know that at times you are a bit pissed off that despite all that you do, you're still scraping by while others less talented are living a life of luxury. But I hope you realize that there's a lot of people out there who appreciate what you do. Hey, man, we all have our own struggles. We all have our own struggles. Even people that are well-to-do have struggles that I would not have if I was well-to-do. Guilty, I do not subscribe, don't worry about that, to the show, but in the future, I may be able to make a substantial donation to your good self. Oh, that'd be lovely, but, never, always put yourself first. Make sure that you're all good before any of that happens. I'm not a big fan of social networking sites, but with your forum moving over to your own website, I may join up. Yeah, if you haven't, I hope to see you there, I see. Oh, yeah, I see. Okay, good. Just want to make sure that's right. Or LC, not sure. Thanks, man, and good luck in all that you do. You accepted my friend request on Xbox Live. Okay, cool, good. Toast, yeah, toast. Toast is the acronym to obtain anything. Start thinking, which I think is quite relevant to Wiggly. Is that what toast? See, I always had a fixation with toast and toasters, and there you go. Thanks, I see Northern Ireland. Very good. Very nice. Lovely. Where is I? Here we go. All right. Oh, and, oh yeah, Kirby. I had it so that I could read. Sorry, everybody. Here we go. So, here comes, thank you for your kind words. Really means a lot. If I read that beforehand, I probably wouldn't have read it. I'm not good with the thanks and the things. Kirby. Here we go. Kirby, sorry I missed you on the last We Talk Games. Ran out of time. Hello, Wiggly. There is something that I want to comment on regarding the last episode. One of your listeners wrote in a letter regarding ancient aliens, and I have to say that I completely disagree with your assessment on that subject. Rather than just tell you my opinion, I want to get your thoughts on a special that was on the History Channel a few months back. Here is a link to where you could download it from some type of torrential downpour involving water. This show pretty much lays down all the evidence that extraterrestrials did visit early mankind and expresses it much better than I could hope to. I just want to hear you go into more depth on the subject. Thanks, Kirby. Hey, man, always willing to take that type of request, especially when it involves television. And this is also good because you won't take it personally because you watched the television show. It was compelling to you. And you completely disagree with the ancient aliens. And that's great. So let's go through it step by step here, frame by frame, if you will. The show History Channel, Ancient Aliens. You could probably find this somewhere, YouTube and things like this. We start off with Neil and Buzz. Hey, wait a minute here. What about Michael Collins? Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, Edwin Buzz Aldrin Jr. These were the first three guys to go. And, of course, only Buzz and Neil got to go down to the surface of the moon. But, Michael Collins' job in this was, we wouldn't have anyone on the moon if it wasn't for Michael Collins. So it starts off with this. Oh, that's science-y. It actually happened. And the question is, if mankind can make it to other planets like the moon, why can't aliens come to Earth? Well, that's perfectly reasonable. Nothing wrong there. Number one, we went to the moon. We went to the moon purely based on Newtonian physics. Like I mentioned before, roughly 250,000 miles to the moon, 240,000 miles to the moon. Yet, it's 240,000 miles to our moon, okay? It is 78,000 light years. Light years! That to so 240,000 miles to the moon. 4.585229.86 times 10 to the 17th miles to the nearest galaxy. Okay? 78,000 light years to the nearest galaxy, everyone. So that's those are a little bit of discrepancies in making a jump from aliens coming to our planet and us going to the moon. That's a bit of a stretch. Bit of a stretch, however, with different types of propulsion and time travels that we have yet to experience. That might be, you know, a different calculation. However, right now, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a 78,000 light year problem. Just with the opening remarks, that might be one reason why aliens couldn't come here. I'm just saying. Next comes a very important premise for this show. This show is based upon the admittant. This show is, first of all, wait, let me back up. Because we didn't really get to the reveal yet on what the show is based on. But here's the premise it's based on. The narrator says, amidst a wave of modern UFO sightings. A wave of modern UFO sightings, eh? That's what we're gonna start on. This is gonna be our foundation for this episode. Amidst a wave of modern UFO sightings, a new theory emerged that ancient aliens visited us and were regarded as gods. There is so this is not a floorboard. This is a spider's web with lots of missing pieces and in between. Now, if you don't already subscribe to Skeptic Magazine, I implore you to go out to your local bookstore and pick up the newest episode, because this episode is going to resonate with just about everything I've touched on this show. Number one, 40 years of Scooby-Doo. So we have the moon landing, we have Scooby-Doo, we have Tetris 25, Game Boy 20, what's that called? 2009 is the lustrum for a lot of historic events. So I think it's quite fascinating. Well, it's actually even, and Woodstock, got that. Very good, very good. But the e-skeptic, the what's supposed to be for kids, but I think it's it's very relevant for adults all the time, the e-skeptic section of the Skeptic magazine. But 40 years of Scooby-Doo, if you approach this episode of the History Channel's Ancient Aliens like Scooby-Doo, the Scooby-Doo gang, then you get a much better perspective on this, and hopefully we'll bring Scooby's friends, particularly, I guess, Zelma, channel her into my review of this episode. But I'm getting far too sidetracked. In here, number one, the cover story is Christian Origins, the greatest story ever garbled. Perfect, because it will answer all your questions about Zeitgeist. If you remember Zeitgeist, I said was not full of it had a, a couple of hit on a couple things, but most of it's just all wrong, made up, and poo-poo. And here we go into the part of Zeitgeist part one. So very, very good that they go in depth on all the inaccuracies of that, so I don't have to. We also have something that relates to this, the modern UFO, amidst a wave of modern UFO sightings. Page 10, how we staged the Morristown UFO hoax. This is how people, some skeptics, some critical thinkers, some kids, they staged this Morristown, New Jersey, right across the border there from Pennsylvania, they staged these series of UFO sightings. And the interesting part isn't that people got fooled by this. The interesting part is how the newscasters reported it, how people reported what they saw, and how the UFO researchers, just like the ghost researchers, jump on, make up things, don't investigate, don't approach this with a critical thinking. And that is a fascinating story. Please pick up The Skeptic. You'll see lots of different versions of people that are said to be the Jesus on the cover, like maybe, I don't know, Horus, and definitely Krishna is on there. So pick that up at your local store. Let us move on with this recent wave of modern UFO sightings. A new theory emerges that ancient aliens, and it's not so new theory, it's a set 1960s, 1970s theory, visited us and were regarded as gods. So already, just like the History Channel approach to ghost, this is an unconscionable, presumptuous beginning that UFO sightings are somehow alien craft with visitors from other planets within them. We don't even establish that, and yet we're basing all of this ancient evidence on another prefabrication. This is beyond any type of physical evidence or scientifically provable experiment. I need to watch no more of this to realize this is a work of pure fiction. But forcibly, and for Kirby, for Kirby looks a lot like forcibly when you're writing and reading. I continue to watch. What follows next is your typical Machu Picchu, Nazca lines, Egyptian hieroglyphs, and of deities that authors retrofit to look like 1970s astronauts. Because none of these glyphs would look like our modern suits, or maybe suits that we'll use in, you know, 5-10 years, or definitely not suits that an alien would probably wear. Because if an alien is going to be able to travel 78,000 light years, they're probably not going to dress like, you know, Buzz and Neil and Walt Simonson. Sorry, there's this monkey like screaming outside in a tree or something. I don't know what it is. Michael Collins. You know, they're probably not going to dress like them. So, and we're going to get into how this isn't even really what we're looking at. May of 2008, the Vatican, which is, of course, the most scientific organization on Earth, declared that belief in ETs is okay. Once again, what does that even have to do? What is the term for that type of evidence? It's not even anything to do with the story whatsoever. The Vatican says that you can believe in extraterrestrials. What? That's just amazing to me that this would even be part of the show. This really shows what we're basing the show on. Then a philosopher says aliens could have guided ancient cultures. What? Where the fudge? How can that go unchallenged to just have some guy say that aliens could have guided ancient cultures? Sure, yeah, and Sigmund the Sea Monster could have guided ancient cultures as well. I could get up there and say anything. Daredevil pulled a pterodactyl out his ass, and that guided Edison to create the light bulb. Yeah, it could have, but I seriously doubt it. Occam's razor, ladies and gentlemen. This is, how can that just be out of nowhere, completely unchallenged? By the way, this episode, we have a skeptic in here, I'm sure, but no rebuttal whatsoever out of outrageous and just purely fictional claims. Then Reverend Barry A. Downig, author of The Bible and Flying Saucers, steps on his own tongue by adding a bit of truth that to a thinking person could ruin his whole church gimmick. He states that in today's technological age, people are embarrassed to mention angels, but a spaceman would be okay, so we don't feel alone. And I'm paraphrasing what he says here, but the gist of that is more telling than anything else, because it's true. As we progress technologically, the hobgoblins, the leprechauns, the muses, the angels, the things, the mythological looking creatures get, of course, more technologically advanced as we become more technologically advanced as a civilization. Now, you may say, oh, that's just because old people would see the aliens and they were all in their spacesuits, like Apollo 11, and they just thought they looked like angels. No, because angels were originally those griffin looking things, you know, that had like human heads and eagle beaks and lion bodies with wings. Those were angels. And then eventually, through romanticizing these type of creatures, they became, you know, just looking like handsome dudes with wings or tiny little babies flying around. Can you believe the next element we find is the basis for this show? And you guessed it. Ancient Aliens covers, so it's Van Dyneken's Chariots of the Gods. This is a thoroughly examined, corrected, debunked, and explored book. Van Dyneken admitted fraud in his evidence. He faked evidence. Now, faking evidence is nothing that is outside the realms of science either. Science also fakes evidence. Some scientists may, unscrupulous or for whatever reasons. But that is why the nature of science is to have repeatable experiments independently verified, and you have double blinds, and you have everything else so that you can correct these type of hoaxers, charlatans, unscrupulous, crappy, money-grubbing jerkwads. Unfortunately, nothing exists like that in pseudoscience, so you get nothing. Van Dyneken is on this Ancient Aliens. That's what everything is based on here. Everyone else that's a part of this here, they're quoting Van Dyneken. If you only study Van Dyneken, you will think that Ancient Aliens are the only answer. When confronted by the reality of their meaning, Van Dyneken caught forging clay pots with the UFOs on them in 1978. Then this is followed by a gaggle of Chariot of the Gods marks that never went deeper than Van Dyneken's archaeology for proof. To prove these assumptions, they never dug any deeper than his drawings that are, you know, erroneous, or even answer his self-iterated question. How does and now here we go. We have an ancient map, and they say, how does an ancient map show a landmass that has only recently been discovered? Well, I would have to think a spaceship made this ancient map on a deer skin or whatever this map was on, you know, because we know that UFO people draw like our ancient cultures. To show this landmass that's only recently discovered. Recently, I don't know what they discover recently. You know, 50 years, 100 years, that's recently, I guess. It is if you're, you know, with your sliding scale. I mean, can you think of a least logical jump to make than saying a spaceship helped people draw an ancient map that shows a landmass that only recently has been discovered? No, these are maps drawn by people in boats, drawing what they see, okay? They think it's Antarctica, and then they show a possible battery. You've seen the Bad Dag battery. And the planetary calculator device I mentioned in the last show. We talked about that. Followed by the most easily debunked lines of NASCA business that are simple raised picture glyphs created for calendar demarking. You've seen the spider, you've seen the spider and such, and you know the bird, and you've heard claims that they are only visible from an aircraft, which is just complete fabrication. A creation of the Nazca lines are done with a plumb line. Somebody's standing on a person standing on a bump. Has a plumb line. They have the little things chart it, and they go through and they tell people where to go and drop their piles of dirt and rocks and stuff, directing a handful of others, and has been replicated countless times by serious investigators. These are not serious investigators. And then you see these airstrips in Peru. Airstrips? What type of vehicle were the gods flying that they needed airstrips to land? Were they flying biplanes, these visitors from 78,000 light years from Earth? They were flying biplanes that they needed to go take off on a runway. I need more space. I got to follow these airstrip lines. It doesn't make any sense. Did their weavers also create their intricate clothing designs and blankets for like mini aliens to land their mini biplanes on, because they had very complex fabric weavers as well, very intricate patterns. This was not a race of idiots that created these. It's not like cavemen came out and said, "Oh, biplane." No, these were people that were highly crafted. They cared a lot about art. They cared a lot about design. And they created beautiful and wondrous things. And now I hope that I mention, and I think that I do, the geoglyphs. Okay, here we go. Very good. No problem. So now, a chariot of the gods, Mark, tries to draw analogy of modern cargo cults. And I've mentioned cargo cults a lot on A Wiggly World. These are more primitive races that are visited by people in planes or people in ships that bring them some cargo, and then they keep going back there and praying and making like a religion out of thinking that people are going to come and rescue them. This is a whole savior. This is Jesus right here. Jesus 101. As it has become known today, Jesus is going to come back and save your soul. That is a cargo cult right there, Jesus. He's going to bring with him loaves of bread, right? And a sword on a horse. To the ancient Nazca. Now, they're trying to draw analogy between the modern cargo cults to the ancient Nazca lines. I guess giant spiders and monkey were landing on those mile-long strips in their biplanes? How is this any reflection? These are just denoting what they represented the constellations with in these glyphs. And the lines pointed to different astrological, for whatever reasons. These are the types of shows that are incredibly frustrating to watch. They can't even put together the explanations mentioned in the previous section of their own show. Like, they mention in here what's going on here, and then they're saying that, oh, these are like cargo cult myths. They're showing the spider and the monkey and the bird. And what are they landing these? They're landing these bird gods and monkey gods. Now, there are geoglyphs all around the world. People didn't have Xbox back then. They didn't even have radio. Okay, what are you going to do? You're going to build stuff. Build goofy stuff. Build practical things. You're going to build things. You're going to try to show that you're better than the next person by building giant things. The more giant, the better. How about the thing of Hercules? And speaking about Ireland and Scotland and the UK, the giant thing of Hercules with his big giant penis. What about that? That was for Hercules? So, to give him an erection? I mean, you can only see that from a balloon, from a spaceship. No, you can see these things. Everything on Earth can be found in Nazca. Did you know that? Every raw mineral on Earth can be found in Nazca. That's why it's this barren desert. Because everything in the world is so much in abundance there that they build giant factories on. What saps all these people building factories around, rivers and strip mines and all these other places of the world, industrializing them, when here, Nazca has everything that you could need in the world right there? Then a fiction writer gives his first hint of logic. Why can't it just be a big piece of art? Thank you, fiction writer. Then Van Dyneken talks over flybys of the art, saying that there is no other way to see these pieces except from flying vehicles. He's talking over shots of glyphs that are on the sides of mountains and hills. And from the ground, you can see the glyphs on the sides of these mountains and hills. And from the mountains and the hills, you can see the glyphs that are on the ground. What the fart? You're looking at things. You could see the glyphs that are on mountains by standing on the ground and looking at them. And when you're up on the mountain, you can look down and you can look at these glyphs and you could see them. What do you mean, flying vehicle? Is a mountain a flying vehicle? Is a hill a flying vehicle? I guess. We're on the earth. It's flying through space, you could say. You could argue that. Then we get into God and the Bible. Once again, a great source of science fact, the Bible. Ezekiel and the wheel. Of course, we're going to get Ezekiel and the wheel. And I spent a lot of time going into Ezekiel and the wheel on a previous episode of Wiggly World. Check the show notes for that. Do a search in your iTunes if you have that in your library. Just do a search for Ezekiel and should hopefully pop that episode. Let me do it now for those that can't do that because there's no button for it. Well, that proved to be a lot more difficult than not because evidently I didn't put Ezekiel in the show notes. But free and no prize to anyone that knows that episode and emails it to wiggly@wigglysworld.com and I'll enter you in that contest that we have when we talk games since no one's guessing that music. Just don't tell Kyle I did that. Oh, he might have heard. But I talked about that a lot. The Ezekiel business. They talk about it briefly. It's a wheel in a wheel. Yeah, but it also had dudes with four heads, and one head's a lion, the other head's not, and whatnot. There's all this other stuff. That's not a spaceship. That's an effed up shroom trip, everyone. That is someone looking at some crap that they're just, out of their mind when they're thinking about this stuff. That's page 3. Now we're on page 4. And then the Louis Navia talks about Joseph Blueblish or something, the design Mariner spaceship that got its inspiration from the passage of wheel in wheel. What the heck is this supposed to prove? That's just how, like all prophecy. It's a cheat. Well, something's prophesied, so someone gets inspiration from the prophecy, and then they make it self-fulfilling prophecy. But, Blueblish probably didn't, design an entire Mariner spaceship based on the Bible, or else we'd be in trouble, because it would be of, non-too similar materials, and it would have to have elk skin satchel sacks and things like this and be a tent. It would probably be bad. And now we get to my favorite and one of my favorites, Enoch, the Book of Enoch, precursor to Noah. His name means Noah. Another copy of Atnapishtim. I love this guy. Enoch, the guy that went to heaven, God showed him the area where he kept the moon, the sun, the stars, and the raindrops all in the same room. All them stars, moon, sun. Then a funny shot that is, but they don't talk about that, of course. Van Dyneken doesn't mention that. He only mentions God's friends and their occupation. Occupations of God's friends. They're spacemen. God, all powerful, has spacemen friend that have to fly around. And I don't know if I want to get into it now. Oh, yeah, here we go. Then a funny shot that is not explained. It's an old painting of Ezekiel's wheels. Like someone, some artist did an interpretation of Ezekiel's wheel. I don't know if it's old or new or whatever. Then they cross-dissolve to a floating space station that you might think is something that actually exists from NASA, but in reality is a concept painting for the orbital space station from the movie 2001. I'm so thankful that I recently watched this movie. It's like showing, you know, a picture of the future future world at the World's Fair in the 1950s, and saying, you know, here's it's an artist's rendition of something of what the future will look like that we've probably already passed because it was supposed to happen in 1992 or something. And then saying, look, this Bible passage looks just like this painting from the 1950s World Fair about what the future will look like in 1992. Proof that the Bible is real. And this is the standard so far. UFO-related tabloids expose. Have a bunch of people sitting out, unchallenged sound bites, while showing unrelated photos and footage of anything. Just pull out your ass, whether it's a well-documented photo of a hubcap or of a 1930s World Fair artist rendering. You know, this is the type of quality that this show is giving us. And then Goofball McGee, the biggest goof on here, Giorgio A. Tsoukalos, legendary Times magazine, the proof that the Bible is true is because when it was written, writing was a fairly new invention. So why would they write it down if it wasn't important to them? Because writing was so new in the time of the Bible, people wouldn't have wasted their time writing the Bible if it wasn't important for them to write it. It's as if he didn't even bother to ever study anything he makes a living writing about. He writes about things that he never bothered to study or look into. And I want to go back and I want to read the Bible. I want to touch on it just a tiny bit. I won't bore those that don't like that segment. But it just says a little bit that we'll tie in later with what people of this time believed. And it will also maybe help with that previous email as well, and we shall see what we shall see. Why can't modern societies come to grips? Now, this is a quote from douchebag McGinty there. Why can't modern scientists come to grips that these ancient writings might be true after all? Because a bush doesn't talk, even if it's on fire? A woman is not unclean during her menstrual cycle, and telling an angry mob to rape your virgin daughter instead of some visiting angel is absurd? And the dick thing, cutting your wiener, living in the belly of a fish, is equally ridiculous. Walking on water, although it might be cool, does absolutely nothing for the greater good. If you're going to make a difference in this world, walking on water isn't going to feed hungry people. It's not going to cure diseases. It's not going to grow back limbs. It's not going to end sickle cell anemia. Walking on water is not going to help anybody. It doesn't do the greater good. That's why we don't want to come to grips with these ancient writings might be true, because that would mean God is a huge dick. It's just a dick thing to do. Most of the actions and behavior attributed to the gods of the Old and New Testament, as well as the God of the Quran, flying up to heaven on a winged horse, marrying a four-year-old, you know, this is a lot of bunch of crap. It's like that billboard. An educated person knows the Bible is crap. Well, I wish you'd said that. Then we get into the other culture's account of flying machines. Once again, huge, reaching, pleading analogies. Ancient Indian craft that, one, made of metal. Two, in places and... So they're talking about this ancient Indian craft. And they say, number one, it's made of metal. Number two, it's in two places at once. And number three, it moves like a butterfly. Then Michael Cremo says, this is consistent of what modern sightings of UFOs are like. Modern UFO sightings say that the crafts are made of metal, they're in two places at once, and they move like a butterfly. I can't tell you how many times I heard someone report a UFO, and they say, yeah, we're made out of metal, it was in two places at once, and it moved like a butterfly, it sting like a bee. What modern testable evidence-driven sightings? None. That's my imitation of Turbo. Listen, these Indian demons are like flying tents. I mean, it's a tent. You see it. It's a guy. He's sitting on a flying carpet. He's sitting in a tent that has like birds flapping on the sides of it, or they're in chariots that just have, you know, they're just flying around on their own, or carpets, or sometime a dude just flies around. He's just flying around, and they're dressed in contemporary garb. They're dressed in, like, you know, robes and stuff. And I don't care if he's wearing a funny headdress. People wore funny things on their heads back then. I mean, if you were a priest, if you were a holy man, let's take a classic example. Everyone's seen the Statue of Liberty, right? What is she wearing? She's wearing a crown with a bunch of like a crown of thorns, like a big thing sticking out her crown. That's a weird crown for her to wear. That is not a crown. Those spikes, she wears a crown that's lower that you used to be able to look at. That's her crown. Those spikes sticking out of her head are representations of a halo. That is how they represented a halo, shining light, you know, a star glimmering in back of her head. That is a halo. So, you know, even today you can see that an understanding of something as recent as the Statue of Liberty. Even now, our cultures don't recognize, many people in our culture don't realize that that's a halo. It's not part of her crazy spiky crown. Okay. And there's elephants. Hey, when did you ever hear Contact? Yeah. Can you imagine Whitley Strieber? He materialized me through the garage door where I saw a giant elephant floating next to a spaceship. He went and sold zero books. This is all fantasy, okay? They're using spears and swords as they're flying through the air and they're UFOs with elephants by them. You know, all those stories are accepted in India. Of course, it's their religion. We accept that a guy, you know, went to ground, he said he's God, he's born as a baby, he has a lineage through his father's line. Wait a minute, his father, he was born of God, not of Joseph. He's only related to Mary. Then he, you know, made fish, and he walked on water, and he turned water into wine, and then all this other to-do, he was God, and then he's a baby, and then he's a man, and he allows himself to be killed. He is God, but yes, he's killing himself so that we could be... Why not just forgive everyone? Listen, we believe a lot of crazy things in our culture. Why shouldn't other cultures believe crazy things without questioning them? And realize that this is just, you know, our tradition. So now we get out written mythology, and now we get into the physical evidence. Oh, this is, I cannot wait for all this physical evidence that we will have. They show stone sculptures from around the globe. The one long pan is of a glyph, obviously some type of ceremonial monkey type outfit, complete with big monkey ears. It's a guy, he's wearing this outfit. And it's a dude, and he's inside of a mask that has big, giant monkey ears. And I've seen, this is one of the things that Van Dyneken said, oh no, that's a space helmet with giant headphones that you would see like in the 1950s. You know, people had to wear these giant headphones. They're not wearing earbuds, you know, they're not wearing an iPod. They're wearing giant 1950s style headphones You saw this a lot in the 1940s. Submarine band in the Our Gang, the Little Rascals business, and the guy, they would do their, they hit that final note, the cymbal crash, and the guy's headphones would blow off his head and smoke, and his hair caught on fire and stuff. No one knows what I'm talking about. That's what it was. George Avery says, you see a picture in Italy of two spacemen with helmets on. What else can it be? And they show this picture from Italy. It's two stick figures. And it looks like they're wearing some type of festival headdress. It's stick figures. It's not even outlines, okay? And it looks like they're wearing some type of giant headdress. Why would you think this is an alien space helmet thing? It's beyond me. It's beyond me. And once again, it gets in... When we're talking about aliens, we have to come back to the fact that it's just so uncreative in the visage of what they think these people look. This is all laughable retrofittings. They are not helmets and halos, although some may be halos. And I mentioned the Statue of Liberty. Everything I saw... And those pictures just look like ceremonial headdresses or how they pictured their gods. You can't remove these drawings from the time period and what was popular then. Look around your house now. Is every drawing, is every action figure that you see a representation of actual physical beings? Is everything in your house... Like, I'm looking around, I got Bozo, I got Superman. I mean, people don't really look like Bozo, although a guy dresses up like Bozo. I don't say my doll of Bozo the Clown looks like an extraterrestrial spaceman. You know, they wear their big red noses, they wear their red yarn hair that sticks out, and they all have their white protective radiation-blocking sun masks, and they wear big protective gloves and giant... They have to wear these giant shoes because they have to kick a lot of things. You know, I mean, I can make up tons of stuff to try to retrofit this with something that might exist. Like, I have tin soldiers, tin figures of, you know, Frankenstein's monster, Creature of the Black Lagoon, Wolfman, the Mummy. These aren't representations of real things. I have the tiki thing here. I have Ultraman. Ultraman, you know? I have a walking Ghidorah, King Ghidorah, Ghidorah. Are you telling me that King Ghidorah is real? Well, it must be because I have this thing that walks and flaps its wings, so King Ghidorah must be real. Because why would I waste my time having something that wasn't a representation of real life? I have Ricochet Racers. It's a gun with bullets that are shaped like Captain America and Spider-Man laying down, and you shoot them out of a gun. Then in Guatemala, we see a mummer-like dude that Giorgio Sokolos is telling us looks exactly like a space helmet. Remember when Buzz Aldrin had that space helmet that was had all that feathered headdress attached to his space helmet? And all the feathered headdresses... gold medallions that Neil Armstrong had on, all the gold medallions around his neck. And then he shows an artistic representation of insects or flying fish that he says is a fixed-wing airplane. And then a headless spaceman inside a capsule. I mean, what the hell good is a headless spaceman inside of a capsule? How's he can't even push any buttons. He doesn't have a head. Here we go to Mexico. Pyramids of Palenque, Lord Pical, carving going to the underworld. And this is what people interpret as a capsule. You know, he's going to the underworld, this Lord Pical. And people say this is a capsule. They say a plant that is in the picture is exhaust. And they're saying he's working a launch capsule. like classic 1970s rockets. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that we might be going back to the capsule type of rocket. But do you think that that's what ancient aliens are going to come to this guy and he's going to get in there? He's number one, he's nude. Like, he's just wearing a loincloth or something. And he's wearing a big headdress, like, you know, like you might see a Native American Indian wearing. Or, better yet, some type of South American, Middle America Indian. But he's working the 1970s classic capsule with pedals. Remember all those pedals that they used? And the big pull chains that they use inside the capsule? And by the way, he's in a mummy. Oh, this guy was in a mummy's outfit, actually. He's in a mummy's outfit. I don't know how to explain that. He's going to the underworld because he's dead, okay? And he's wrapped up like a mummy. That's why he's in a mummy outfit. But yet, no, he's going to the moon. Why were the Mayans so concerned with their calendar? Because they had agriculture. That's why they were so concerned with their calendar. Really, are these people that daft or just that greedy? I don't know. Now we see what is dated to 1531 BC, the map of Antarctica with no ice. 1531 BC, this is one of the first pieces of evidence that we're really seen. I mean, all the rest are just, you know, it's like, these are like Rorschach blocks. Oh, you know, it's a bunny. The people are retrofitting this to try to make it look like something. The problem is that they're using Van Daniken's 1970s retrofitting. Like, what was popular in Van Daniken's time? You know, spacemen and the 1969 lunar landing. So all those things from NASA, all those, like we saw so many times, you know, people compared this passage in the Bible, that passage, to helicopters and stuff like this. We're not going to be fighting wars with those same type of helicopters from the 1970s. Okay, we're going to have a lot of different vehicles at the end of time, which, whatever. The 1531 map of Antarctica with no ice. Now, how do we know this is the coast of Antarctica, number one? That's what I asked myself immediately. What makes this not Australia? I mean, look at when the map gets superimposed over the current world map. Between the U.S. and Mexico, if you watch this on a video, between the U.S., Mexico, and South America, there is just this giant... Trying to read what I said. Coast. It's just a coast. If you look on, you know, on the real map, but then when you look in there, it's like this blob, and then New York and Pennsylvania, like I don't know, New York, Pennsylvania, to Maryland is like an island. South America is like Africa. I really need to study this more, but it doesn't line up to me like they want it to. It may even be a representation of the East Coast of Asia. I mean, what they are claiming to be the tail end of Antarctica may just be how Brazil would lay out on their map. George Nuri, Mysteries of the Piri Reis Map. Coast to coast in the questionable. Oh boy, I can't read what I'm what I wrote here. Sorry about that, everyone. Okay, very good. George Nuri is the quintessential spoofer, quintessential spouter of the whole old tagline. Ancient cultures were too stupid to have been able to build pyramids and sculptures by hand. Pyramids, Stonehenge, Cusco, all the old arguments are put forth here of how these old civilizations could not quarry or move large blocks of stone. And we have replicated these techniques using ancient techniques. And how do we know how they did some of this stuff? Because many times it's shown in their artwork. That's what's great about Egypt. They show how they actually did it. And I just recently favored... this one French fella, investigator, shows how actually pouring limestone blocks using all the ancient techniques and things that they saw in glyphs and whatnot, and ancient tools at hand. They didn't put nails in their boards. They tied them together with ropes or cloths and things like this. And they built limestone blocks just like with the pyramids. Now, many pyramids may have been quarried, may have been moved. We've showed both ways how you could do this. Once again, Occam's razor. We showed how you could do this using ancient technologies and less people than we even thought possible when we first began to create hypotheses on this. No need whatsoever for any space vehicles or anything such like that. Then von Däniken says, Enoch built the Great Pyramid because it cannot be destroyed. Well, it's not doing so good. And not only that, but it's pretty dumb to just build a giant solid stone pyramid. If you're in, why build this giant waste of space? It's just a bunch of blocks. And we know that it's burial tombs. We know why they're there. It's just astounding. You find tombs in someone place, you realize that the reason for this, it's not to go live. You know, Enoch wanted to build something. Why didn't he build something that, it was a little more spacious so you could, redecorate and something more interesting? These are pyramids. There are pyramids all over the world. Right. That tells you something. What possible reason could there be for pyramids to exist all over the world in what may have been disjointed communities? Now, we already have come to the realization that sea travel was happening a lot earlier than we had originally predicted and reported, or people have reported on, or whatever you want to call it. So there was a lot of trading going on, and not just by sea, also by land. So there was a lot of trading going on. There was a lot of crosstalk. But let's leave that all out of the way. Why would the pyramidal shape, the shape of a pyramid, and believe me, they're not all Egyptian pyramids with, straight, most of them are step pyramids. That's the largest majority of pyramids in the world. Just from my looking at them, are mostly step pyramids. Why would people build something that looks like a big mound of dirt? I guess if you take a look around, we might be able to figure out what might have inspired them to build something that's not heavier on the bottom than it is on the top. It comes to a point, mountains and hills and everything around them. Okay? That's how, it doesn't mean that a UFO went around and said, build a pyramid. I like them. Pyramids are not the best shapes to withstand the elements. A geodesic dome would be. Now, if geodesic domes popped up all around in ancient civilizations, I might be a little more, but even then, I wouldn't jump to these conclusions. So you look at a mountain, it's not wide on the top and skinny on the bottom. Also, the pyramid styles are dissimilar, and that's something, of course, that is not mentioned. Bus travel was known, and no need for ET to be there for telling people about the benefits of building today's pyramid. Billy Mays here for pyramids. Build them. They're like a mountain. Look at this house. It's not a pyramid. Of course, Easter Island is tossed in there as well. You got to do that. Now, this is probably the easiest to explain about how they made it, because there are still unfinished statues and caves with the tools that they use to make these freaking things. Why'd they do it? Listen, why do people do anything? In our modern age, people let their children die of diabetes because they wanted to do the faith healing and picking up serpents. and they're still, some half buried to show how they stood them up as well. So now, Tiwanaku, of course, similarities, Puma Punko, Punco in Bolivia. Now, most of this hoo-ha originated with Posanowski. And the truth is, author Posanowski was debunked in 1930s for his dating techniques, with his carbon dating of these places. Carbon dating actually shows that the source stone ranges from between 520 to 1060 CE. London is older than Tiwanaku. So there's that. Also, I don't think I mentioned it with... With the maps, we knew of more ancient maps, of course, from Sumerian civilizations and Egyptians. So that was just a map bit. I wanted to get some dates together, and I guess I never got around to doing that. But you could look this stuff up yourself, really. So that's on that. Now I'm not sure because I'm not sure when this whole diorite thing... They talk about how diorite is so hard that you would need diamond tools, diamond-plated tools, to cut diorite. That's how hard it is, harder than granite, or almost like granite or something like that. And these ancient civilizations, in fact, we get this next. One step out of the Stone Age, we couldn't do it today! Both are outright falsehoods. We weren't one step out of the Stone Age. And if we were, it's called the Stone Age. We're working in stones. But we're actually in a Bronze Age. And how do you cut diorite? Well, a very easy method would be, not very easy, most logical effort would be, number one, we are not talking about modern day building to begin with, okay? We're not talking about someone that, I got a deadline, I got to get this done by, Thursday, I got a lady waiting. No, these are people that this is what they did. You know, this was their job. If you were to cut diorite, you can look up diorite on Wikipedia. You can see a vase from 3600 BC, 3600 BC that is made out of diorite, a vase. It is gorgeous, okay? And something as small as this bronze, it's only about 12 inches. So they were getting very intricate with this and very good at cutting it and shaping stone. But if you want to cut big pieces of it, you use a copper bar and you saw it back and forth, and you put water and sand underneath the bar. You keep watering and sanding that, and that's the same method used today to cut... quarry rocks, and if you had to drill the holes in it, like you see these holes drilled in it, which it uses a drill press made out of timber. You get a big guy, he leans on the drill press, he puts all his weight on it, and then this wooden drill. Also, you have guys on side that work a bow that make the drill go back and forth, and you put water and sand, fine sand in there, and with that twisting motion, you drill a hole in stone. Sand, that's why people still use sandpaper today and sand things down. Does it take a hell of a long time? Hell yeah! No one said that these things were made in, like a day. But that's how you quarry rock. It doesn't matter the strength of the rock, the composition of rock, or anything. You can do it with enough elbow grease and sand and water. And they had plenty of sand and water. So that's how you do it, though. You don't need an alien had to cut it with a laser beam or something, or a diamond. No need for that. And, do a YouTube search. This is related to that other business I talked about, building the pyramids. Do a YouTube search for how pyramids were built in Egypt, and hopefully you'll get that little documentary by that French dude. That he's doing it. He's actually looking at it. And we also talked about the snake lights, the Dendera snake lights. They think it's lights, but all it is it's a representation. I mean, you see, it's a snake. He's coming out of a lotus flower. These are supposed to be birthing jars to incubate the snakes, and these people, of course, worshipped this serpent, and people say this looks like giant light bulbs. And then they say, well, how did they light that? There's no soot on the cave. Well, first of all, you can have soot-free oil lamps that were very common in Egypt and still very common today. Soot-free oil lamps, okay? About the airflow down there, I don't know. I would have to look into that, but I'm sure there's an explanation for that as well. There's tons of different explanations. Occam's razor, you don't need to jump to, you know, electric batteries charging up giant snake lamps. The if we do talk about the Baghdad battery, which is coming up, I mean, that could have been used for electroplating, if anything. And how do they stumble upon something like that? You know, it's very simple. You have an accident. You drop something in your lemon juice. You drop your brass pipe or whatever in lemon juice, and you get a little current from it, and you say, hey, you know, electricity. Okay, yeah. When it's about a bronze, when it's about a stone age, we couldn't do it today. Both outright lies. Now we see the Antarctic, the Antikythera device that I mentioned in the last episode. And we are told that it served two purposes. Navigate your way through the seas, which it would have been very bad to do that because exposed to the sea water, it would have froze up like probably within like 3 or 4 days. Which is most likely not the purpose of that. It was to tell the via the constellations when the Olympics should be held and when certain astrological devices would be in certain other places. And yes, it is a marvel. But what? How many modern marvels do we have? How many? I mean, we put people on the moon. Okay, we put people on the moon with the computer processing power of, you know, a wristwatch. People using slide rules. You know what I mean? This is what we did. This, we stuck people on top of a bomb, shot their ass up into space, and they made it back. And we did that in 1969. People today, with the technology that we have, think that there's no way that we could have done that in 1969 with the technology we had back then. A computer took up the size of a room, and it had the processing power of, you know, the same thing that that your car has under its hood, even less. And it was the size of a room, with a lot of people running around with punch cards and giant rolls of tape. I'm choking on this story. It's so obvious to me, but you know, that's cool. It's me. I mean, shouldn't we just celebrate the wonderful innovation of that device and look at it as how silly would it be for a UFO to give us that, you know? Here, now you can tell when you're going to have your Olympics. Oh, thank you. That's great. It is not the same as finding, you know, a pocket calculator or something like that in one of these ancient tombs. That, you know, something digital, something, even that's thinking too small. If something is going to be able to travel 78,000 light years, then I hope that we would find something, you know, incredibly organic and natural and it would look like magic to us. This does not look like magic to us, and it wasn't like magic to them, because no one wrote about here's this magic crank, you know. Now we're back to the Egyptian carvings. The secret crypt, we go in. The snake reliefs are light bulbs, and I spoke about that. And the good old Baghdad battery. A dozen of them were found in Iraq. Finally, Michael Shermer. Here we go. Michael Shermer, finally. And, you know, you get one of the big guys in there, too. So it's not even just Bush League. It's Shermer. But he's all the way buried towards the end of this episode. And all he gets to do is talk about the battery. He says, you know, if it was a battery, what was down the line from it? You know, it doesn't. So what if it was a battery? I mean, people, conspiracy people and whatever these people are, Van Dynekenites, you know, they like to leap, oh, a powered magical mystery machine of time and space. No, you know, there's no photos of showing what was down the line from these batteries. None. Not on the snake light bulbs or anything. The snake light bulbs are coming out of a lotus flower. Lotus and a snake still in Indian culture, two main icons of religious worship. And there's no wires. Where are all the wires from this that were, you know, powering the Flintstones car and everything else that these people would lead us to believe? Now the narrator states, here's what the narrator says. If evidence of ancient astronauts, if ancient, what about out there? If evidence of ancient astronauts exists here on Earth, what about out there? When did we establish there's evidence of ancient astronauts here? Nowhere. Now we are given a perfect example of retrofitting. And thank you, Giorgio. Thank you, you sap. This, my friends, is an absolute perfect example of retrofitting. He says, at the Avenue of the Dead, each of the pyramids there line up exactly like the orbits of the planets in our solar system. So that means ancient astronauts that came to Earth and imparted this wisdom on the Stone Age people of the day determined the number of planets in our solar system, the orbits, and the definition of a planet, based on future man's interpretation between 1955 and 2008 of how many planets are in our solar system. Because now, as we can look farther, as we can look with more accuracy, and now as we realize Pluto, not exactly a planet because it's like the same size as its own moon, objects may actually be more planet-like candidates. Our children and those that died before the 1950s did not know of Pluto. 16 moons of Jupiter. Is that in there? No. 18 moons of Saturn. No. Nowhere to be found. What determines what is a planet? Is a moon a planet or is it a moon? What do you mean it's the exact number and orbits of our planets? Mercury is about the size of our moon. So is our moon in here? Do we count our moon as a planet and Mercury as not a planet, as the moon of the sun? These people, well, not these particular people, but many of these people living in this time period, believed that the sun was not like the stars. That is why when Enoch went up with God and God showed him where he kept the sun, the stars, the moon, and the raindrops and the snowflakes, all those things sort of like were the same type of thing. They all went in a big globe around our, on different shelves of a like a glass type structure of these globe balls around our flat earth. If some of them believed the earth was flat, if some believed it was rounded, it doesn't matter. But the goofball continues, the sun was in the middle of the solar system, just like the town hall. And then he goes and retrofits Stonehenge with the same erroneous assumptions that somehow, somehow we only have, you know, nine planets or however many planets you want to say. Even in Zechariah Sitchin, tenth planet. You know, how are we counting these planets? And what constitutes a planet? You can retrofit all that you like, my friends. And you can make it, you can make it mean anything. I can make it say that it's in the exact line of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And before I get into the very little Bible tie-in with that segment, now they do a connect the dots between the layout of Tikal, a constellation, which is just, you know, an ambiguous number of stars that you say that forms this constellation, that forms that, that's Archer, that's this. Some dots on Mars, you know, pick any dots that you like. And the narrator has the dots to ask, coincidence? No! It's just a bunch of random things that you were able to tie together because they're so random that you're bound to find a pattern that matches it somewhere. I can sprinkle pixie sticks in the yard and I'm bound to come up with a pattern that's going to match something else. Was that guided by aliens? Probably. And I couldn't watch anymore. Maybe there was more. I don't know. But that was seriously all I could stand of that. And that was far too much. But, you know, it's a nice try. No, it isn't. It isn't. It's 1970s rehashed. This is 40 years ago debunked here, people. Just a very quick reading here from Genesis. We always love the in the beginning, you know. In the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Now, remember, we divide this up into 7 days seventh day God rests. So, right away, we have a problem because early times, even after vegetation, we realized that the days were a lot shorter. Some believe that in the very beginning, like right when the moon was formed, and there's many theories on that, the Earth might have had a 4-hour day. Okay, how long does it take for the Earth to rotate around its axis? All right, a day. You almost got a day and a night, 24 hours plus. So, there's fractions of a second. So, and I don't know the exact one. I don't feel like Googling it now because I'm holding my giant Bible up. But, you know, right here we get a layout of a 7-day week, and that's not exactly how it was. Just recently I learned because of these great moon episodes about tidal rhythmites. And because of the tidal rhythmites, we can see that days were like 18 hours long at one time because of how these tidal rhythmites left their marks on rocks and stones and things like this around the where the tide came in. So, you know, that's fantastic to actually be able to see this written in stone, showing that the days were quite different than what they are today, and especially in the time of this biblical writing. So, I mean, there's a lot more obvious things, but even here's some of the more subtleties. And we get into, first of all, God said, let there be light. He made light. God saw the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. So we had a day and light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, and that was the first day. He made light and dark. Remember, we talked about this. And then God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate the water from the water. So God made the expanse and separated the water under and the expanse from the water above. And it was good. God called the expanse sky, and there was evening, and there was morning. And the second day, then God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let the dry ground appear. And it was so he made, he called the dry ground land, and gathered the water, he called that seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees, and on land that bear fruit with seed, and according to their various kinds. And it was so, and the land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. No cross-pollination here, everybody. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, and the third day. So no understanding of agriculture right there. And God said, let there be light, and in the expanse of the sky, to separate. So we know when it's light outside, to know that it's day. Let's separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs. They're only there to, you know, be a sign. It's not good enough to know just, hey, it's light out, it must be day, it's dark out, it must be night. We need a sign, actually, in the skies to mark the seasons and days and years, and let there them be light in the expanse of the sky, and give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights. He made two great lights. the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the skies to give light on the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. So, you know, pretty much, it's game over. Obviously, either God didn't understand that the sun was a star, and that the moon did not emit light, but reflected light. Either God did not realize that that the sun was a star, or these ancient people, of course, are making up a storybook, and they don't really understand that the sun and stars are really the same things. Big, giant balls of gas, driven by nuclear fusion of hydrogen into helium. Hydrogen, magnesium, carbon, sulfur, nickel, iron, oxygen, silicon, chromium, calcium, the sun. The big giant explosion that makes life. Game over, my friends, and game over for Van Dyneken in this bonehead that says all the planets are shown properly and everything like that. It's very myopic. It's thin, guys. It's thin. I think that's it. Hey, for more information, go to geocities.com. And does that still happen? Yahoo, I guess it does. geocities.com/unforbidden_geology. Or I guess you could just Google unforbidden geology. But it's a great little site that shows you a lot of ancient Egyptian stoneworking tools and methods and things like that, and covers it. It's still under construction from the 1980s, it looks like. But it shows rock and mineral hardness and weakness and things like this. And very, very nice. Can narrow neck the stone vases be made today? And then it shows how you do it. Wow. Neat stuff. Cool. Good. So check that out. You know what? I'm going to leave you today. I wish that there was more things I could pull from the Wiggly Library. And fortunately, it would involve me going back to DAT tapes and things like this. And what were those mini discs. And I don't have the opportunity to do that now. So I was looking through iTunes at some Rachel Sage stuff. She said, I have an open invitation to play anything. I just saw that they have a little Moonlight and Fireflies, a little bit of that album, in the iTunes music store. And I thought, Moonlight and Fireflies, I know that this is not about NASA and reaching the moon, but it's close enough for me to celebrate that. So I love Rachel. She's great. I have to talk to her. I haven't talked to her in a long, long time. I haven't talked to a lot of my old friends from the Milkshake. I need to get in touch with them. I see a new Simon Stinger is in there and everything, and I don't know what that's about. I have to reach out to them and see if I can get some of that played on the show. But I really, really need to release some new Wiggly stuff, some new Wiggly and Trapdoor stuff. I desperately need to get on that and get working on that. Well, as I mentioned, I have a lot of work to do trying to mix this wrestling interviews together. And I will talk to you soon, my friends. Thank you very much for listening. Moonlight and Fireflies by Rachel Sage, A Wiggly World.
Everything beautiful, I'd be scared of beautiful if beauty wasn't true. So many open skies, eyes. How my head is spinning, I can see my own reflection in the fear of missing you. Don't you see?
Be so certain.